another episode of Disrupt. I'm Bailey Bryant with Home Healthcare News. If you're a home-based care provider interested in capitalizing on the Medicare Advantage opportunity, this episode is probably going to be one of your favorites. You're also probably going to want to register for our upcoming virtual MA Summit. You can do that at masummit.homehealthcarenews.com. But before we get into all that, I want to give a shout out to our podcast sponsor, Homecare Homebase. Its powerful cloud-based home health software streamlines virtually every aspect of your business. That way, you can spend less time on paperwork and more time delivering quality care to the patients who need you. You can visit hchb.com to learn more. But today, we're going to be learning a little bit more about Medicare Advantage and home care. Like I mentioned, this comes ahead of HHCN's upcoming virtual MA Summit. This episode of Disrupt is a little teaser. Recorded live from the closet of my Chicago apartment, I recently connected with Ann Tumlinson, who is the CEO of ATI Advisory, a leading expert on the economics of aging, and shameless plug, a panelist at our upcoming event. She broke down the new mid-year benefit flexibilities and what they mean for MA plans, as well as some of the financial drivers guiding MA decision makers. And of course, how home care agencies can secure those sought-after MA relationships. Here's what she had to say. Hi, Anne. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this conversation for a few different reasons. One is obviously that you have one of the deepest understandings of Medicare Advantage and home care benefits of anyone in the industry, which our listeners are going to find really useful. And then on top of that, we have the Home Healthcare News Virtual MA Summit coming up on June 24th through 26th. You're going to be there virtually, of course, talking about some of the financial considerations driving Medicare Advantage decision makers. So definitely want to get into that and give listeners a little teaser, but I want to start with something a little more broad strokes first. So obviously the reason for this podcast and our upcoming event are that there are so many home care agencies out there that want to work with Medicare Advantage plans. But in reality, only a small number of folks are actually doing that. In 2019, I think it was something like 3% of MA plans offering in-home support services. And then pre-coronavirus, I know your team released some new data for 2020 to show that those numbers are up. So in today's landscape, what does that figure look like?
Yeah. So today, there are 223 plans that are offering the new supplemental benefit in-home support services, which is the technical name. That's the category that's really referring to the in-home personal care services. So it's 223. That is an increase over the previous year, which I think was only about 80. The good news is we're definitely seeing an increase from 2019 when these benefits could first be offered to 2020, which is kind of the second year. At the same time, this is also the first year that plans could offer like a whole new set of benefits that are much more sort of focused on social support needs. They're called special supplemental benefits for the chronically ill. And it's a category that lets plans offer benefits that are not related to healthcare at all. So food and produce, meals, pest control, transportation, social needs benefits. There's a long list. And so between the non-medical, primarily health-related benefits like in-home support services and adult day and these new non-medical services, we have 619 plans that are doing one and or the other. So that's a lot. That's not a high percentage of about 3,500 plans. The fact that there are 619 plans doing this at all, to me, is like a small miracle. given just how different, this is such a huge change from the Medicare program that Medicare Advantage plans ran 2 years ago.
Definitely. I'm interested, are those plans spread all across the country? Are there certain benefits that are the hottest, the most popular? What kind of trends are you seeing on that front?
Yeah, so a couple things. In-home support services are definitely the most popular of all of the kind of brand new benefits that could be offered under these new authorities. However, a limited meals and limited transportation are even more popular than in-home support service. So in other words, I'm using, you know, offering benefits where Medicare Advantage plan enrollees can access transportation for medical purposes or can access a meal in a limited way specifically related to medical needs. That's still considered health related, and so it's somewhat limited. Those are the most popular. Those are really, really, really popular. So I would say kind of meals overall and transportation overall are the most popular, but in-home support services are coming right in behind those. And then we have some really funky things, right? Like there's 51 plans offering service dog support. We love that one. That makes us really happy.
Yeah, that's super cool.
There's a lot of home-based, you know, like something called General Supports for Living, which is 67 plans that are doing things for, so your post-hospital, you know, transitions in care that can include like paying for assisted living or paying for, even in that category, paying for in-home support services that are focused on a post-acute care episode. So that's pretty exciting. I would say geographically, there's a weird distribution. We're still really trying to understand, you know, why what's being offered where it is. I suspect it's largely related to kind of where plans get paid the most, because these benefits are funded through kind of it's like a derivative of, you know, a difference between what the plans are sort of believe they can deliver the benefits for and what CMS has set as sort of what's called a benchmark. So the difference between those two is what they use to fund the supplemental benefits. So where the benchmarks are higher, you're going to see more supplemental benefits. Where the competition is, where there's more density and more competition between plans, where the market share is more divided among a lot of different plans, all of those different things factor in. So it's hard to say, but really we're seeing it in the Midwest around the sort of Illinois, Indiana area, and then also it's spotty. I would just say it's spotty, but definitely California, definitely the Pacific Northwest, Florida, Texas. So those are some states where we're seeing a lot of hotspot activity.
Definitely. So it's kind of spread across the country.
Yeah. Where you won't see a lot of it are in a lot of really rural areas. So we don't see anything in Montana, but that's where we don't see a lot of Medicare Advantage plan activity in those areas anyway. So, you know, this is, and, you know, we can drill down at the county level and we can see, you know, kind of exactly what's going on at the county level. And we've mapped it. And I'm hoping at some point we'll be able to actually put some of those maps on our website and people can access some more of that detail for free. So be on the lookout for that.
Yeah. So it seems like there's opportunity for folks, like we said, in spotty areas across the country. And this might be a silly question, but for all of those plans offering some kind of benefit, are they always partnering with a home care provider? Are they finding other ways to provide those services? Or do you have any information on those kind of relationships?
Yeah. So it varies tremendously. I mean, I guess I would say that one of the things that we're seeing is that, you know, we're seeing a variety of approaches, I guess is what I would say. We're definitely seeing an approach where, you know, somebody in, you know, kind of in the health plan, you know, kind of bureaucracy or management structure has reached out specifically to, you know, a home care provider in their market or one or two or three to say, hey, we want to offer this benefit. You know, are you guys, you know, equipped to deliver it? And can we start to talk about, you know, what that relationship would look like? You know, that's one way we're seeing it play out, where it might be a regional plan like Geisinger or the Scan Health plan or another sort of, you know, another plan that's sort of specific to a region and they want to work with, you know, regional and local providers with whom they can build long-lasting relationships and can be sort of collaborative in their approach to collecting data and information and that kind of thing. So that's one model. That's like model one. And then another model is we certainly see some of the larger, you know, insurance companies like Humana, Anthem, WellCare, that, you know, where there's a broader geo, you know, they might have a national presence or that concentrate in some geographies, but, you know, they're not local. And those plans are using some of them haven't done anything really. You know, they just put these benefits in their benefit package and they haven't really built out yet, you know, kind of a contracted network that they can refer their members to or that can access those benefits through the plan. So I'd say it's still really an immature kind of set of relationships where there's a lot of floundering around. And then, so that's model two, floundering around. And then model three is where there's an intermediary that's serving as what I call kind of like an aggregator. So we have some wonderful relationship with a company called Health Align, which is kind of a startup, and they've been sort of trying to build relationships with health plans, and a couple of health plans have contracted with them essentially to kind of, you know, find all of the different home care providers, kind of aggregate them into a, you know, one platform and help to kind of, you know, play the go-between role, you know, in terms of contracting and things like that. And I think that's my favorite kind of model. I mean, I love the local model. That's great, but that's not, you know, how are we going to serve United and Humana and Aetna? As these things start to scale, there has to be some kind of intermediary platform, just because it's too hard to contract with it's a very disaggregated industry. So, you know, how do we kind of create that scale? I think we have to have an aggregator role.
Yeah. And I think those models are probably quickly evolving, especially now in the age of the coronavirus. How has that shaken up the Medicare Advantage landscape, if at all? I'm sure it has.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, no, it's definitely shaking it up. It's a little hard to say right now. I mean, I think, okay, all of a sudden, three things have happened. One is many Medicare Advantage plans are in this very weird position where their costs are way down for medical care because doctor's offices and everything else are closed or have been closed. So they're kind of sitting there with this pot of money that they're supposed to be spending that they haven't been able to spend. And then secondly, they've been given this incredibly broad flexibility from CMS around these supplemental or non-medical benefits that are, you know, that kind of previously only a handful of them have really been offering as a formal benefits, but now CMS is saying, hey, you know, if you need to change that kind of in the middle of the year, which is normally not allowed, you know, you have to wait a whole plan year to actually make changes to your benefit package. They're saying, but, you know, hey, we get it. You know, you did your benefit packages way back when, before anybody knew what COVID was, and now you've got a bunch of people stuck at home who need things like, you know, meals, grocery, and home support services, errand running. And so we're going to allow you, the health plans, to make those changes in your benefit packages so that your bids effectively, so that you can meet your member needs and redirect the resources that were kind of previously flowing down the river and have now been diverted. But, and this is kind of the third thing, there's an enormous amount of uncertainty. So it's really hard, I think, especially for larger plans, you know, to kind of, from a financial standpoint, say, okay, we're going to, all right, hey, this is great. Let's start paying for meals, or let's start, you know, buying in-home supports and services, because they don't know if 3 or 4 months from now, there's going to be this huge pent-up demand, you know, for all these elective procedures, for example, or doctor's visits or other things like that. They've got to, you know, they've got people now sort of accessing medical care through telehealth. They don't know how that's going to shake out. So I think that, you know, there's some hesitation on their part, I think, to jump in with both feet and start paying for things that, you know, they haven't been paying for before. So it's a little bit of a murky landscape right now, but I do think my own personal opinion is that, you know, given how long we expect this pandemic to sort of be dramatically affecting our lives, I think it's going to dramatically change the way that Medicare Advantage plans and healthcare in general are delivered. And these flexibilities will be more and more deployed to give the plans the ability essentially to meet their members' needs. So I think it looks really good for home care right now. I think the bottom line.
Yeah, I'm sure there's not a lot of data out yet on this, but we could see plans adding new home care benefits right now, left and right.
That's right.
We're not really sure what's going on yet.
Exactly. And I want to say one other thing just about this is that, you know, this is all obviously, it looks really good for home care, but I don't mean to sort of sound flip because I know that there's a lot of challenges to delivering home care right now as a result of the virus. But certainly the need for safe, you know, sort of safe services for people who are at home, particularly vulnerable to poor outcomes from the risk of infection, then that, you know, there will be, I think, you know, over time, there's going to be a need. No, the other thing I just want to say is that plans, health plans also have another way or sort of another mechanism for paying for what we can be like non-traditional services. And that's through something called their quality improvement activities. So it's not a benefit per se. It's just something the plan decides that it wants to pay for as part of a larger set of programs that they are allowed to offer as what is called quality improvement activity. And so, you know, for those who are listening to this, as you're talking to health plans about what, you know, their members need and how they're going to deliver it, you know, you can be definitely want to talk about these supplemental benefits, but these benefits, when something becomes a benefit, there's a lot of rules around it. Like it has to be offered to everybody in a certain category. You have to have a lot of processes and procedures around how it's delivered. If something's a quality improvement activity, there's a lot more flexibility that the plan has. So you want to use that phrase as well. Like, we'd love to be part of a supplemental benefit that you're offering, but we're also open to talking to you about, you know, serving as a provider under a quality improvement program.
Got it. That makes sense. So that brings us to providers right now. Like we started this podcast saying, there are tons of folks out there who would love to be involved with Medicare Advantage plans. What's their best option right now? What advice do you have for them when it comes to making the most of this moment and these opportunities to get involved?
Yeah, I hate to say this because I think it always feels too amorphous or hard to wrap your hands around or anything like that. But I guess you've got to sort of attack this in a wide variety of ways. And one of them is really to truly try and find a way to get in front of, you know, people. So I always say, look at the local health plans. Who in your market is like a real leader at a community level? And really engage and involve at a community level. It could be a hospital, a health system, a physician group. Like, you know, I give the example of Geisinger or, you know, Scan Health Plan in California as organizations where, you know, they are, you know, they're a little bit less bureaucratic and they're a lot more sort of focused on the how are we meeting the needs of our community, and they're part of a larger kind of ecosystem in that community. So look for those guys. Those are going to be the organizations who are going to be more receptive to working with you if you are kind of part of their community, and that's less bureaucratic. There's fewer people to deal with, and you need to find the decision makers and, you know, try to get in front of them. So let's put that in one bucket. Another bucket is to try to, if you're part of a national organization, like if you're part of a larger, you know, home care organization or, you know, it is to kind of think about kind of strategically at your corporate level, you know, or at a regional level, what is going to be your strategy or your approach you've got power in numbers. You've got kind of a quasi network, if you will, already, you know, how do you kind of set organize yourself corporately or at a community level in a way that, you know, gives you something to take to those conversations that says, hey, we have this coverage, we have these. And, you know, I think, then kind of finally, the two other pieces of this are, you know, you really do have to have something to say about who you are when you make that approach. So like, you know, kind of just getting smart about, and I'm going to talk about this at the conference coming up, is, you know, really making sure that you understand what is going to be valuable to these health plans in terms of, you know, what their pain points are. I mean, you're going in and essentially offering, you know, these benefits can be helpful to them. You can be really helpful to them. And you got to be able to kind of answer those questions. How can these benefits be helpful? How can these services be helpful? How can we as an agency be helpful in delivering them? And, you know, kind of what are the benefits to you in offering them? And so, you know, it's doing your homework, you know, figuring out what, you know, who's in your market, what they're offering, what they're not offering, how you can help them.
Yeah. So obviously this varies from market to market, but generally when we're talking about MA decision makers, what considerations are they taking into account when they're building out their plans and they're looking for partners and that sort of thing?
Yeah. So first of all, it's a long process of deciding what's going to go into a benefit package. You know, we are it's June of 2020. The plans have, you know, submitted or are submitting their benefit package their bids essentially to CMS for that right now. Like those decisions are all now made for 2021. So it's already made for 2021. So now, you know, maybe in like a month or two, they're going to actually start, if they haven't already, thinking about what's going to go into their packages for 2022. So just know what cycle they're on, right? You kind of have to sort of be in terms of like, what are they taking into account when they put those benefit packages together? It's a long cycle. So the big, you know, there are going to be several factors. One is really, you know, just how much extra money are they going to have under their bid, so to speak? And then how are they going to divide that up? A lot of it goes into what other plans are doing in that market and how they can be competitive. You know, Anthem, for example, offers a lot of very non-traditional, innovative supplemental benefits. And that's just kind of part of their brand. That's just sort of part of who they are. You might see, you know, Humana doing it in certain markets where they're experimenting or they feel like they need to do it in order to be competitive. It's sometimes these benefits are attached to certain products. You know, Humana might offer 4 or 5 plans in one market and only one of them will have these kinds of benefits attached to them. You know, at the end of the day, what Medicare Advantage plans really want to do is be very, very competitive on enrollment. That's the number one. You know, how can we structure our benefit package to be attractive, both in terms of attracting new members and retaining current members? Enrollment is really key. And then the second thing is, like, how can we do this in a way that doesn't, like, we, you know, can we trust that if we price this risk at, you know, we're going to offer these supplemental benefits, that we can feel, the actuaries and their plans can feel comfortable that that's not going to increase spending in any way, shape, or form above and beyond what they estimate that it will. So in other words, if we're going to offer our enrollees who have certain chronic conditions in a, you know, in-home supports and services, we're going to let them have access to, say, X hours a year at X rate. Can we feel comfortable that we can really control that? You know, is that, we're going to price that a certain way and we want to feel comfortable that we know what we're doing when we price that. So that's a big concern. And then I would say finally, you know, they really, they care a lot about what we call coding. So, you know, making sure that they have the information that they need. So as the eyes and ears, you guys, you know, the home care providers start to become eyes and ears in the home, information about what kinds of issues that can help their care managers manage their population better. And then also, you know, what kind of information can help them in the coding that they need to get paid well by CMS. So there's a lot that they're taking into a lot of things. And in terms of partners, I mean, they're really just looking, they are looking for organizations that can deliver what they say they're going to deliver on time. What MA plans really do not want is friction between the enrollee or the beneficiary and the plan because something has gone wrong in the delivery of the service. So they're looking for organizations they can trust, who can verify that visits occurred, who can deliver them when they say they're going to deliver them. That's, you know, just really basic competencies is what they're really looking for. I mean, they're looking for other things as well, but that's the most important thing.
Definitely. Finance is obviously an important part of that equation. You touched on that a little bit. We have heard from some providers in the home care space who are involved in these MA plans, and they basically say, you know, we're really glad to be involved in this, but don't, if you're a provider, go into this expecting to hit it big or get rich doing this. A lot of times those margins are slim and the finances are very specific.
Yep. That's exactly right. So two things about that. One is, and I kind of touched on this earlier, and I will, when I do my presentation for your conference, I'll actually provide you guys with slides. Everybody will have slides to be able to see this kind of visually. But the picture sort of, you know, every health plan getting, I'm just for illustrative purposes, like $1,000 per member per month. And that, so there's, you know, three things that really affect how much money is available to pay for in-home supports and services. And the first one, if they're going to offer them, and the first one is that amount that I just mentioned, $1,000. Let's just call that the benchmark right now. And then the plan says, hey, Decima, you know what? I think we can do this for $900 per member per month. And then CMS says, that's awesome. That difference of $100, you get to take 50 of it and do whatever you want with it. Yeah, I'm being facetious a little bit, not anything, but, you know, cost sharing, all the things that are really all the fun stuff that is going to help you attract enrollees, like lowering the cost of the plan premium, lowering the out-of-pocket costs, offering supplemental benefits. So they have it's not a lot of money relative to the rest of the spend that they essentially have available. And within that, they have to prioritize. So that's how we end up in a situation where there's really actually a fairly small amount of dollars, you know, available. And this is very theoretical or hypothetical right now, but there's really a small amount of dollars available, you know, kind of designated for the category that we're talking about. And so that's why you're hearing this from other home care agencies is like, this is, you know, in many ways, this opportunity is more strategic and symbolic than it is like, you know, financially a big win right now, because there's not a lot of money on the table to pay for these things. And this is the second thing. I said there are two things. The second thing is that like I mentioned before, the actuaries have to price the risk, which means what happens is there's boneheaded decisions made. I love actuaries, but, you know, they're like, hey, how about if we pay for, you know, it's like $4 for every 15 minutes or, you know, there's kind of crazy ways that, you know, kind of they don't really know what they're doing, and they're not in a classic health plan. They're not really reaching out to get support or help with that. They think they know how to do it, or, you know, so the rates are not great in many instances, not always, but in many instances. And so it's a process of education, of trying to find the right people in the right place in the organization that you can educate them. You know, at the end of the day, sometimes you just have to say no. I mean, Anthem offered to really low rates on home care. And I was talking to some home care providers in Connecticut, and I was like, if you can't do it, you can't do it. Just tell them. Just tell them that that is not going to work. So maybe the last thing I'll say about all this is just that I do think that the policy environment is very fluid right now, meaning this is an election year. We have a huge pandemic going on. Nursing homes are under fire. And, you know, I think we could see if Medicare has never been more flexible. I think kind of going into next year, maybe there are going to be some proposals on the table to make the pot of money available for home care from public paying sources bigger, because there's a recognition that people really do need these services to stay home and to stay out of nursing homes. So, I'm kind of hopeful that that will go up. And that's why it's so important to sort of strategically be positioning yourself with these payers now, because with that pot of money, I think there's a good chance it could go up in the future.
Yeah. Well, to learn more, I think our listeners are going to have to tune in to our MA virtual summit coming up. I know you and I could talk about this all day long. So I think we're going to have to cut it here and refer everyone to the upcoming event, which I'm excited about. Do you have any final words you'd like to add or any pearls of wisdom until then?
Oh my goodness. No, not until then, but I'm really looking forward to the summit, and I wish we could all be in person, but you know, it'll still be a lot of fun. So I appreciate you all inviting me.
Oh, of course. We're so glad to have you. Well, thanks again, Anne, and we'll be hearing from you again soon. Thanks for listening to another episode of Disrupt. Again, if you're interested in our upcoming virtual MA Summit, you can register for that at masummit.homehealthcarenews.com. You can also go to homehealthcarenews.com to sign up for our daily and weekly newsletters. I'm Bailey Bryant, and this has been a production of Aging Media Network out of Chicago, Illinois.